There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepy head, get up, get out of bed, cheer up.
But if we're being honest, a game against Millwall was only ever going to go one way. Welcome to Charlton Live. So hello and welcome to Charlton Live on your Sunday evening. My name is Louis Mendes. We'll be looking back at Friday night's 1-0 defeat against Millwall. The result that I guess deep down we all knew was coming, even though it was a fairly even game. But yeah, we'll look back at that one. We'll hear from Lee Bowyer later on in the show as well. Of course, joining me on the phone to discuss that game and a few other things going on in and around the club. In one, we've got Mr. Nathan Muller. How are you doing, Nath?
Not bad, mate. Not bad.
Your favourite Millwall player scored on Friday, so
I knew that was coming. Yeah. Someone dug me out on Twitter. Hopefully, at least we know people are listening to the show, I guess.
Yeah. So on the preview show during the week, Nathan said that he admires Jake Cooper. I guess, you know, he says he's a good player, but it came back to bite him very much in the backside on Friday evening as Cooper scored the winner. Also, we've got Mr. Benji Cloak. How you doing, Ben?
Yes, mate. Not bad. Thank you very much.
Taken advantage of the pub's reopening today, I see.
Yeah, had a walk down to the pub. Enjoyed it. Very surreal, but the new normality.
Yeah, drowning your sorrows from Friday, of course. And also joining us in his little radio cupboard is Mark Newbury. How are you doing, Mark?
Well, I'm officially announcing my retirement from football this week because I was out playing with my 2-year-old and he nutmegged me.
Oh dear!
And once you've been nutmegged by a 2-year-old, you're thinking, that's it, time to give up.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I felt after Glove Pop tackled me at one of the football versus homophobia events a couple of years ago. But yeah, sad to hear. Right.
Well, Glove Pop is the same size as a 2-year-old, so that's fair enough.
That's true, yeah. Hopefully you'll be listening to this podcast. Right, so on tonight's show, as we said, we'll be looking back at the 1-0 defeat against Millwall. We'll hear the highlights, the brief highlights, as I'm sure you can imagine, from the game, and also the reaction from Lee Bowyer, who talks about the match. We'll hear from some of you guys as well. We've got a few tweets and emails that have come in during the course of the afternoon to discuss the game. I also want to talk about, you know, how the table's shaping up. I've got a copy of the table in front of me that's got 12-point deduction for Wigan applied and one that hasn't got it applied. So we'll try and work out where we think we are in terms of the relegation places, because other than Friday, results have been very kind to us this weekend. We'll discuss the response that the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust received from Paul Elliott, the sort of owner, on Friday as well. A few holes to pick, I think, in that Q&A. And we'll focus a little bit more on the Wigan situation, because Lee Bailey was asked about it on Friday. And of course, we'll look ahead to Tuesday's game with Brentford. They come thick and fast in this division at the moment, of course. And it's another toughie over at Griffin Park on Tuesday evening. Right then, Nath, you know, jokes aside, I'm sure you got one hell of a grilling from your father on Saturday morning, the Millwall fan. But frustrating again. You know, had our chances. We've said that against Millwall before, but we're not taking them at the moment, and it's come back to bite us in the arse.
Yeah, exactly. That's the show done, mate. Lovely. Cheers, mate. But I mean, obviously, my old man gave... It was already pre-planned that I was going to go see my auntie Saturday morning. I didn't really think about to look who we were playing that weekend, but yeah, he gave me a bit of a ribbon, as you can expect. But you know, me and Tom, we was talking about on WhatsApp, and I was a bit emotional at times, I think, because I was just angry. I think the thing is with me is not the result. Well, it is the result, but the main thing for me is how we played. And like, we could have done so much better in the final third. And I just thought that the first half was really annoying because we kept giving away silly fouls when we know how good they are on set pieces and how big they are, but we just didn't seem to learn. I know Bo said in his thing that he could only see us scoring, but as time went on and it was 0-0, yeah, we did have a bit more maybe threat per se, not massively, but you just knew that we was never going to get a last minute goal against Millwall. Never. And as much as, you know, I like all the players, all the forwards, and I'm sure they'll come good. If you look at our strike force now, you've got Chucks, who's been injured most of the season. You've got Hemed, who's hardly played in the last couple of years. You've got Green, who's naturally a right winger. And then who's the other one? Who am I missing?
McCauley,
and then
you've got
Macaulay Bunn. And for me, as much as he's done really well at this precise moment in time, he's not a championship striker for me, but...
His confidence is on the floor at the moment, isn't it?
Of course. I mean, and there's only so much you can back up a player. You know, Bowes is always behind them, but you've got to say, as it is sometimes, you should be scoring them. Especially where we are, we're not creating multiple chances per game, so when you're given a chance, unfortunately their centre half managed to do it. Do you know what I mean? So, and that's the difference between winning games and the last few games now. I know we said it on Thursday that we will continue to create chances, I'm not saying that, but we do need to be ruthless, a lot more ruthless in front of the goal.
Yeah, and we're not at the moment, Mark. That was the frustration, is the fact that we create a few chances. I think we've defended okay, to be fair. You know, we've reduced Millwall to only a handful of chances, but they've taken one and we haven't taken ours.
That's it. I mean, it's first 10 minutes, we looked really up for it. We looked on it. Yeah, we looked crisp. Let's say Mac had for chance. You know, Hemed's looked good, and then we suddenly disappeared. And after that, I thought, you know, we let Millwall play, which we shouldn't have done. And I think there were too many tactical mistakes going on. I thought Prattley dropping back into between the centre halves gave their midfield way too much space, and because our front two weren't holding it up, it was just coming back in waves. You know, Albie and McGreedy are hardly going to be putting themselves around. I mean, they left Cullen. It was difficult. I just think tactically, we made too many mistakes, and I think Bowyer should have corrected it a bit better than he actually did. So.
Yeah, because that's funny that you should say that, because I thought when Prattley dropped and we went 3-5-2, Ben, that's when Millwall had one hell of a spell in that first half. That's when we probably started to edge the game. For me, possibly in terms of territory and not necessarily chances created after that, but where we were being overrun by Millwall, I think that sort of negated that a little bit, and then it was just quite an even one. And I mean, Steve Brown was up there doing co-commentary with us on Radio London, and he said he thought Charlton were the more likely side in the second half.
Yeah, I think we looked a bit. I thought we looked better with Albie on the pitch. I thought he was getting stuck in, and that's the Millwall way. They're very organised and they get stuck in, 50-50 balls. They always make sure that's theirs. And I thought we were edging that a bit. And of course, Bond had that great chance. Hemed had that one where it looped over his shoulder and he should have done better. We were getting there, and it just seemed when I don't know why Albie come off. I thought he was having a good game half time, and Field came on. But yeah, they just kind of edged back into it. But we see it was an even game. As Steve Brown said, I think we had the better chances, and then going into the second half, they kind of edged back into it. But yeah, it's so frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. That's how we all feel. Right, let's have a quick listen back to the highlights then, so you can remind yourselves of some of those chances that Charlton did have throughout that game. Your commentators, as always, over on Valley Pass were Greg Stubley and Terry Smith.
Back out to Oshalaja. Oshalaja finds McGeady on the left. McGeady into Bond. Can he take it under control? He can't, but he comes back. And Morgan takes a shot and is blocked away. That was on target. Would have troubled the keeper, but Millwall clear. Only as far
just inside the Charlton half on the Charlton left-hand side. Great tackle by Prattley. No, wins it back for Charlton. Little 1-2. Albie Morgan sends Bond on his way. He's got nothing right, but he finds Hemming on his left. Into the penalty area. Instant shot down to his left. Bojkowski makes the save. But two chances in the opening 2 minutes for Charlton.
Yeah, Millwall getting stretched on the counter.
Leonard on this Charlton left-hand side, back inside of Hutchinson. We'll chip it back across, looking for Smith, who gets his header there. Dylan Phillips with the save to his right-hand side that was going in, and the save needed to be made.
Phillips' kick looking towards Hemed. Hemed jumps. It's a good jump from Cooper.
Arm, his arm was all over him. That's got to be a foul, surely. Oh, that was another one.
That was an arm by Malumbi, and Chalner furious with the Millwall man. It's a yellow card. He was quick to give that the referee. I thought he might have been bringing a red there. Chalner surrounding the referee was, as you said, Cooper might have lent him with an arm on Hemed, but that one on Morgan was
anybody watching the replay. Player that I'd be interested to see what they think of that. That was an arm straight up in the air, and there was following on the back of the one from
Cooper. Could go back to Prattley. Chelton just trying to find an avenue at the moment. Ooh, and Cullen ball across towards Lockyer. It's a good challenge from Lockyer. It's a dangerous ball, and Morgan flicks it through to Bond, who's closing in on goal. McCauley Bond one-on-one shoots. Saved by Bojkowski. He tried to nudge it through his legs, and Bojkowski denies him that. Best chance of the game so far goes to Charlton. Forced back by the Charlton right back. It's on the right-hand side of Mills' attack, though, as it goes backwards to Romeo. Just skips past McGeady way too easily. Romeo's got options left and right. Goes inside to Woods. Thinks about a shot. Cuts inside. Dinkborn, the penalty area is lovely. Comes to Jed Wallace. It's a great save from Dylan Phillips. And Albie Morgan clears two great chances. One for Charlton, one for Millwall in the space of about 90 seconds.
That was outstanding.
Looks on the diagonal towards Pearce, who's got the run. Heads it into penalty area. Can Hemmer get on the end of it? Hemmer with the shot! Oh! Inches wide! He just angled his foot. Tommy Hemmer round the ball and just put it towards goal. And just somehow it just avoided the post. A great effort.
And
a good jump by Cullen, forces the pressure. A good touch from Oshalaja finds Morgan. Morgan, that's a lovely ball to find McGeady. Slightly wayward touch, but McGeady can still run in. McGeady's trying to take on Cooper towards the edge of penalty. And McGeady shoots. Tried to place it in the corner and didn't get it right. Chelton claiming a corner.
And got it as well.
Throws his hands in the air. Swings it in. It's a clear push by Hemed.
Yeah, just a bit.
He's headed away anyway. It's out of play. And there is the half-time whistle here at the Valley. We're at half-time is Charlton 0, Millwall 2, McGeady. McGeady looking to turn. Backwards to Cullen. Crosses towards the far post. Oh, it's overhit. McCauley Bond will give chase, but he'll do well to keep that in.
Oh, he has done
brilliantly. Finds Oshalaja. Crossing opportunity again for Charlton. He swings it in. Decent looking delivery. It's a header! Oh, it's just wide. Charlton claiming a corner, but it's a goal kick. I couldn't see who got the final contact. Might have been Tom Lockyer, might have been Tom Ahmed. But a wonderful cross from Deji Oshalaja and great play from McCauley Bond to McGeady. McGeady crossing the penalty area, his head away. Comes down, Cullen with a shot again. It's a good block. Out to Lockyer, to the right-hand side to Matthews. Crossing opportunity for Charlton. Cuts inside. Matthews crossing the penalty area. Ahmed with the header, and it's wide. But Charlton increasing pressure. Headed away by Oshalaja. Great header. Anike turns. Great control. Anike towards the penalty area. Anike goes for goal, but it's wide. And Nike's presence, it was a great turn and touch.
Comfortably wide, but decent.
Hemed controls. It's a good challenge from Pearce. Might come to McGeady and does. McGeady on a run towards the edge of penalty area. Lays it off for Nike. And Nike inside the penalty area to shoot. It's a save from Bojkowski. It was going wide, but the goalkeeper didn't take any chances. Cullen with the corner for Charlton. Will swing it in. swings it towards the far post. Darren Pratley rises. Pratley heads down. Oh, and it just bounces off the ground and
swinging
over.
Swinging. Fairly central position. Headed away. But it also drops to Lockyer, who swung a boot at it, and it's in the Crowdies at the bottom of the covered end.
Someone's going to need new Crowdie, unfortunately. Hell of a strike from Lockyer.
But it's just... Finds Cooper. Hamid pursuing him backwards, but it finds Mahoney. Mahoney takes a shot. That's a save by Dylan Phillips, and the follow-up has gone in. Was that Cooper?
It was. It just continued his run. It was a strong shot from Mahoney, which forced Phillips to save. I thought it was a good save initially. And then the follow-up from Cooper, it just gets there ahead of Lockyer and just taps it in and drives it past. It's a shame, because I don't think we've all been good this second half at all.
It'd be interesting to know whether Cooper was offside from that. There was no claim, no shout.
It's frustrating because Mill have had hardly anything this second half whatsoever.
Need to throw this challenge, they're taking too long.
Oh, good lord. Now, yeah, the referee blows the whistle, adds no time, but a time wasting in that added time, which is not a surprise, but. Familiar story here at the Valley against Millwall.
There we go then, the highlights of Friday evening's 1-0 home defeat against Millwall. Naif, I mean let's go straight to the goal that your mate Cooper scored. Question marks over Dylan or no? I mean, we'll hear from Lee Bailey what he made of it, but I saw some people were questioning Dylan. Do you think there was much more he could have done with that? It was a fierce shot that came in. Was it Bradshaw, I think, who picked it up on the far side, a low shot, and Dill's done, he got behind it, couldn't quite hold on to it, and it's come out to Cooper. I mean, some are saying they thought he could have done better. My initial reaction was, I don't know if he could have done much more than that, because it was such a powerful shot, and he did parry it away from goal, which is what you're taught to do as a goalkeeper.
Exactly, and I think, you know, I mean, Dill's will probably... As much as he probably knew he couldn't really do much, he'd probably still be a little bit disappointed that he didn't do more. But I mean, unless you're, like you say, it was a powerful shot and he did push it away from goal. But for me, it's, you look at the two chances for me, is that you've got the first one, which Dill saved against Jed Wallace, where Albie Morgan went to sleep, which I think might be one of the reasons why he come off. Because I think they were trying to not target Albie, but they knew that he wasn't going to track his man. So Jed Wallace got through. And then even with their goal, I'm not being funny, I can't remember who it was, but you're letting a centre-half run into a box and we've just gone to sleep again. And it's who wanted it more? Who reacted to the second ball? And it was a centre-half. And it was a good finish. But I don't think that, yeah, you could put any blame on Dills. But again, if you can, that's fine. But you've got to remember the saves he's done before that as well. I mean, that Jed Wallace one was unbelievable. When he went for a right goal. And it was like, so you still sort of half a dozen the other. But I wouldn't put any blame at Dill's doorstep. I'm not saying he's not due any criticism sometimes, because we've all criticised him at some point. But for that save there, I don't think he could have done much more. If he literally fumbled it out, literally to someone in the centre, then you could probably say. But like you say, he's pushed it out. But once he's pushed out, he's relying on his defence in front of him to try and get those first, second, third balls. But yeah, it was a bit of a blow. But when it came, what was it? What minute was it? 88, 87?
81st, it was 81st minute. There was still time.
Oh, I was like, wow, here we go again. Yeah. But it's annoying. But it's like, it was just so irritating. Because like I said earlier, it was just, we could have, there was a couple of times where Hemed went through. And I was like, we could have just been done so much more. I mean, like Mark said, we started really brightly, and I was like, hang about, who's this turning up for a derby game? But but in terms of the goal, yeah, it was, to be fair to the lad, it was a good finish for a centre half. Can you imagine Lockie doing that? I know he shanked one, but Jesus. But it was a decent little finish for Cooper, but I wouldn't put any blame at Dills. Yeah.
Well, I'm interested, Mark. I mean, would just because I've seen a mixed reaction from Charlton fans on social media. What was your view on the goal? Do you think Dylan should have done better?
No, I saw that. You know, as soon as it goes in, I think people actually are willing him to, any goal which goes in is Dylan's fault. I said people have butterfingers. I'm thinking, you know, it's that say he's the best keeper in this championship. His shots he's faced, and I think it's come at him. It's low, like Nathan said. He's pushed away from goal. You know, and then Cooper's just come, you know, chanced on where it was going to end up, and it was a good finish. And whether the defender should have reacted better, I don't know. I think it came so quickly at him. I think you've got to hold your hands up and say, you know what? I don't think Dylan can take the blame. I think, like I said, he'll probably feel a bit like, oh, could I have done better? He could always have done better, you know. But it came at him, you know, and he stopped it going in, and it's for follow-up, which, for, you know, for centre half, was really not the level of that ball. You know, So when it happened, there was inevitability about it. I felt through that last half of that second half, I just thought to myself, I just can't see this finishing 0-0. I really couldn't. I just thought they were getting back into it, and we were dropping too deep. I thought, as soon as you made that change at half time, I'm presuming Albie's got a knock, because he was targeted a bit by a couple of air guys, and he got a couple of digs. And I thought, as soon as Field came on, we looked just too defensive. We didn't have one thing Albie can do. He can do that first time pass, and we didn't have anyone on who was doing that. I mean, even when you brought Johnny on, you know, I know Tom was saying on Twitter about, you know, even he could run around for 20 minutes, thinking that's all he did do for 20 minutes, run around. He didn't really get the ball, and we didn't have any invention. So Dylan can't be blamed, and I just think we just looked too defensive in the second half.
Yeah, it was. It's frustrating not knowing exactly what the situation is with Albie Morgan, because we were doing the interview with Bo on Friday after the game, and I had a question about Albie Morgan written down on my notepad, and then we were doing it over Zoom, and my Wi-Fi in the stadium appeared to cut out, and I couldn't get back in, so I never got around to asking that question, which is annoying, because I would have found out whether it was a tactical situation or whether he was injured, because he did go down a couple of times in that first half, Albie Morgan. Ben, I mean, overall, I thought we defended okay. I think there was that one time we fell asleep where, like we say, we saw Woods chip it over the back, and Jeb Wallace went in and Dills made a good save. Other than that, we tended to be dealing with the crosses that were coming in. We conceded a lot of set pieces, corners, but again, didn't give away too many chances from them. But I think you'd say for the goal, I think I just looked up, is Maloney who cut inside and had the shot. And it was just unusual that Adam Matthews wasn't close enough to him to prevent that original shot. And then when it's come back out, Lockyer's almost on top of it. And you think he's going to get his foot there, but Wallace has just got there ahead of him. Because other than that, I thought we defended okay.
I think we defended really well. I mean, for me, the best chance of the game was when he come in the 6-yard box, they cut it across goal, and Smith was there ready to hit it in, and Lockyer just got there ahead and managed to push Smith a little bit off balance, and we managed to block it away. And look, we've had four games now. We've conceded one goal out of those four games. So for me, the defence isn't there to be shot at, I think. Again, I agree with the rest of the guys. I don't think it was Dylan's fault. It's a wet night. It was windy. His shots come in. He's made a save. He's pushed it away from goal. But look, Mill will play three centre-backs at the back. So it gives one of those centre-backs free rein to run forward. And that's what Cooper did. He's free rein. Hemed was with him. If you watch the replay, Hemed's with him at the edge of the box. And is it Thomas' fault? I don't know. At the time, I blamed him because I thought you haven't followed him. The shots come in and Cooper's gone for it and whacked into the goal. As the guy said, it was a good finish. He hit it into the roof of the net. For me, at the start, I think, oh, Tomo, just follow the runner. Like, follow him into the box. I know you're not a defender, but that's your guy, really. You followed him to the edge of the box. Follow him all the way. And yeah, look, we dived in. We tried to stop it. Again, it was a good finish, but overall, I thought our defensive work was good. As Nath said earlier, they're experts from set pieces. We defended well against that. Dylan made a great save in the first half from Wallace. I don't think you can blame the defence. I think we're four games in. We conceded one goal. It was just a shame overall that the chances we had, we just couldn't finish one, really. Yeah.
And that's the main talking point, isn't it, Nathan? It's the fact that we are four games now into the restart, and we scored twice, and they've both come from headers from set pieces. It's clear, you know, we knew going into this little spell with Lyle Taylor gone, with the fact that we didn't score any goals in our pre-season games, if you want to call them that, against Arsenal and against Fulham, we knew that goals were going to be a problem, and you were hoping that someone like Macca was going to hit the ground running in this little spell. We missed a couple of chances up at Hull, perhaps unlucky with one where he headed it wide. Another one was across from Deji Oshalaja that went across the face of goal, which he didn't get onto. And you think, well, if he takes one of those, then maybe he's a different player now. But clear as day as he went through with that one-on-one after Albi played him through in the first half, that he's not confident at the moment. And, you know, our other striker, unfortunately, is Tom Ahmed, who hasn't scored a goal all season.
Well, exactly. And then, as I said earlier, I mean, you look at our forwards, two of them have hardly really played. One's a naturally right winger. And then you've got one who's shot of confidence. So it's difficult. I mean, the only way you're going to get confident is if something, you know, he does, he just keeps that, gets himself in the right positions, and then hopefully he takes one and then we can build on it. But, I mean, for me, it's, you know, I don't think we were good enough up front on Friday, but I also think I was disappointed in McGeady a little bit because I really thought he was going to play well. I don't know why, I just had an inkling he was going to play well, but he had a couple of bits here and there, but he was a bit disappointing. And I think one of the lads said earlier, there wasn't, I think it was Mark said about the invention side of things. If you look at the connectivity between the midfield and the forwards, there's not really a lot there, you know. And we started going long when we had Taylor, you know, we could go long because Taylor could hold it up. It'll peel off. It'll go into the channels and pick it up. But we're not doing that. We just started going long and hoping for flick-ons, and it was just so frustrating. And we're just lacking that little bit of spark at the moment for me. And said it on Twitter, yes, I really think Tuesday's a good game. We'll talk about it later, obviously, for Ozzy to come in. But I just think we're missing that little bit of something else that will give us the link-up play instead of just going, right, let's go direct. We can play it. We can knock it about. Like Mark said, first 10 minutes, we look good. We look really good. We look sharp. But it will come. But like you say, we scored two goals, two set pieces. They all count. Doesn't matter. But if we're going to want to make it easier for ourselves, which we never seem to do, is we've really got to start being a little bit more clever in the final third and being a lot more ruthless.
I mean, when Lee Bowyer looks to make changes then, Mark, I guess, you know, Johnny Williams, Chooks and EK both coming on with 15 minutes left to go. What did you make of it? Well, Chooks and EK were a bit longer. What did you make of the two of them? Because obviously Johnny Williams in particular, we've been hoping that he could be a key player in this run, and he hasn't really featured too much. Bowyer said he hasn't, you know, the break hasn't been kind to him. He came on Friday, and to be honest, he was he was a bit anonymous, which was a bit of a letdown.
Well, that was the thing with all the subs. I mean, Phil did okay. I thought Alfie Doherty didn't really manage to run at anybody and use his pace. Chuck and Bond together, that might work a touch more as a partnership, a bit more mobile, minutes to go. And I'm just thinking, as soon as Millwall scored, I'm thinking, he knows, they should have been ready, been warming up the second half, straight on, got 15 minutes to try it, then he left it too late to get Nabs on. Williams, like I said, I think when he got the ball, he got fouled once, he had a couple of dribbles, but there wasn't anything there. There was no runners, no overlap. And I think we were still sitting, for a team looking for a goal, we were still worried about them counter-attacking too much. As to where he goes on Tuesday, is the answer to that. I think, one, it's who's fit, who feels they can play another game. That will probably do. Whether Matthews is fit enough after, because he was out, to do a Tuesday after a Friday, you know, negates whether he goes three. And I agree with Nathan. I'd stick Ozzy in because I think he has got that. I mean, the way I look at it, we've got four. We've only scored twice, yes, but you know, we've done two wins, one draw, one loss. Now you're thinking, regardless of who you're playing against, I mean, this feels worse because it's Millwall. But you got thinking, so if you'd said to us before it all restarts again, right, first four games, two wins, one draw, one loss, we'd probably said, you know what, I'll be happy with that, I'll take that. It's only because the teams below have started to pick up some points, you know, up until this weekend, that wouldn't have been an issue. So, you know, it's hard all round. You know, I think.
So let's have a listen to what Lee Bowyer said after the defeat against Millwall on Friday. So, as I said, I caught up with the Addicts boss over Zoom. I sort of disappear halfway through and he starts speaking to other people because my Zoom sort of crashed out. But this is a bit of what Lee Bowyer made of the defeat against Millwall on Friday evening.
I thought it was harsh that we didn't get anything from the game. I think it was quite an even game, but I think we edged it second half. And yeah, it's disappointing not to have come away with 3 points in my eyes, let alone without one. So, yeah, disappointment.
It's one of those games, I guess, where it could have gone either way. But, I mean, up here, Steve Brown said he thought the Charlton were looking the more likely in the second period. Is that how you felt it went?
Yeah, I thought that we got into some very good areas. If anyone was going to score, it was going to be us. That's the way I felt. I didn't feel like they was really hurting us or troubling our goalkeeper at all. It seemed to be us, the ones that was getting the chances and missing them. So yeah, it's definitely a tough one to take. A bit like when we played them at their place.
Well, it seems to be the way against Millwall for Charlton. I mean, you did have those chances in the first half. We saw one for Tom Ahmed and for McCauley Bond. I guess it is a bit of a frustration that you'd not converting chances as much as you'd like to only the two goals since you come back?
An understatement. I just said to him there that the chances we created against Hull should have won the game comfortably. The chances against QPR should have won the game comfortably. Cardiff, we created good chances there. And today, again, like you can't keep missing chances. I said to him, we haven't scored in open play. How have we not scored in open play in these four games we've played? How? Because we've probably created 15 good chances in all them four games. And what, we can't take one? Like, it's not like we don't work hard every day. We work hard every day we're in. We work hard on things. And today, McCauley, one-on-one with a goalie, like, can't be missing them chances. You can't. Because if you do, this is what can happen in this division. You can get punished from nothing. So, it hurts. It hurts.
I was going to say with Mackie, I mean, do you think his confidence is a bit low at the moment? Because we know he's a good finisher. And we saw the form he got into when he came into the side earlier on in the season and got his 8 goals. Would you think that with him at the moment?
It's just not being clinical. That's what's up with him. I don't know why he's missing chances. I don't know. But like I said, we work hard and pass on the right information to him every time. So I don't know why. Maybe he just needs something to hit him and go in. That might get him going. But if we'd have been sitting here, you said, Ali, good result, 3 points. I wouldn't have been surprised. So, we've got to wait to play him again.
Yes, Lee, not that I'm criticising your goalkeeper because he did well overall, but were you a little bit disappointed he didn't hold the first shot that allowed Cooper to follow up and score?
No, I wouldn't say that. I thought it was a good, powerful shot, the first one. I thought he'd done well to save that. Then it's in the lap of the gods, then where it then goes to. It could have gone anywhere. Mm. We had a few of them, and then it went to their defenders, you know, and unfortunately for us, it went to their lad instead of one of ours. So a little bit of luck there, and we didn't get it, but great finish from centre half.
And confident you can bounce back, though, because that's the key, isn't it, bouncing back?
Yeah, that's the key. Got a tough one next, Brentford. So we'll have to definitely be at it there because they're a very good side. Completely different to so far. So, definitely going to be a tough one.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers header. And it's Jones.
Yes!
Yes! Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, too!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live then. We just heard from Lee Bowyer after the defeat against Millwall on Friday. Ben, you can hear he's hurting. And you know, I asked him about Macaulay Bonn, what he said about, you know, why he's not quite being at it. And it's clear he's just not being clinical at the moment. But, I mean, we've seen Macca be clinical in stages this season. So it's up to Lee to try and coax something out of him. He said he's given him all the right information in training, but you know he's got a spell of good form out of him earlier on this season. I guess he's got to try and find a way to make sure it happens again.
Yeah, definitely. We need to go back to where the training he was getting before this to get him the goals. Let's remember where Macaulay's come from. Last season he was top goal scorer in the National League, so non-league football. He's come from that. And now he's become, since Taylor's stopped playing for us, he's become the number one striker, really, at our club. We've looked to Macaulay because of his form during the rest of the season. We kind of thought, oh, do you know what, Macaulay's... And they're not just tap-ins he scored. I mean, against Bristol City at home, he scored two really good goals. And there's a player in him. But look, he's probably never come against, like, a big game like that. I mean, it's a big game for us. It's the South London derby. There's extra pressure on his shoulders. He might be feeling the heat because he hasn't scored yet since lockdown and coming back. And he's got Thomas next to him who hasn't scored for the club yet. So there's pressure on him. Look, he probably snatched that chance a little bit where he was through on goal. He's going to be hurting. Of course he is. But look, there's no point. We've got, what, five games left now. There's no point getting on his back. It's time to work with him. There's definitely some talent there with Macaulay. And there's talent there with Thomas as well. It's weird. It's a weird situation, isn't it? Because we're not in the middle of the season now. We're in the middle of our games left. We've got five games left. Look, the teams below us, they've had some poor form over the weekend. So, look, it's time for us to capitalise. Brentford's going to be a huge game, but we've got to work with these strikers now to kind of think, right, how can we score now? This not worked so far. We've only scored from set pieces. How can we? And as the guy said earlier, I think maybe bringing Ozzy in or starting with Johnny, that we got to try something different because at the moment, the strikers aren't feeding off what they've been given.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Right, I mean, Benji's mentioned there, Nathan, about the form of the sides in and around us at the bottom of the Championship this weekend. We've had a bit, I mean, it depends which way you want to look at it. It could be either a wasted opportunity or a bit of a let-off because if we got the 3 points now on Friday and then everyone else went and did what they've done over the weekend with almost everyone losing, then we'd be in a very healthy position. But it's a let-off because we went first, we lost, and then no one really has capitalised on it. Huddersfield got a point at home to Preston in a 0-0. That's it. Fulham beating Ben Maite, getting four of the goals for the visitors. 3-0. Obviously helps Stoke out, but doesn't bode too well for Barnsley. Middlesbrough beating Hull, sorry, at the Hawthorns by 4-2. So, I mean, looking at the table, as it stands, we're 2 points above Middlesbrough, who are on 44 points. We're on 46. We've got Huddersfield and Hull in between us and Borough, who are top of the relegation zone. Barnes are on 41, Luton on 40 points in the bottom two. Then if you take into account Wigan, so Wigan are currently on 50 points, but if they do get this 12-point deduction, which is apparently being appealed, then if they do get it, they'll be on 38 points, which would actually see them drop to bottom of the table. Middlesbrough would jump out of the relegation zone. Barnsley would therefore be the team that we have to stay above in 22nd. They're on 41 points. We'd be therefore 5 points clear, which is effectively a sixth point with goal difference. If they get the five, if they make up the exact 5 points, then our goal difference should be much better. So we're in a healthy position still, Nath. The weekend was kind to us in terms of what the other teams did. Which is good, I guess, when you look into the fixtures. We've still got to play Brentford and Leeds, two massively difficult games. We've still got Wigan and Reading coming up at home in an away game against Birmingham, which is, you know, they're not doing very well, their home form, Birmingham, but it's never going to be easy for a side like us to go away from home. So it's still all to play for, but I guess 3 weeks ago when we were still in lockdown and we were in the relegation zone, I guess you would have taken where we are now.
Yeah, of course. I think if you like you said, for me, I think two wins ought to be enough. Doesn't sound like a lot really, but I mean, you look at if you and then they've got some. I think quite a lot of the teams are playing each other down there. So obviously, both teams can't get 3 points. So I think 6 points would be all right. I mean, and the thing is, obviously, you're gonna have teams now which, I don't, unfortunately for us, isn't the case, because we're all playing teams who have something to play for, maybe excluding Birmingham, maybe. But if you're playing teams like, I don't know, like a Bristol City or a Blackburn, Preston, they ain't really got anything to play for now, I don't think. So you might have some more results from the teams fighting relegation that might pick up some points there. But we said it, like you said at the beginning, it's a brand new start. It's literally like a massive pre-season, and it's a mini 9-game season for everyone. Like the slate's wiped clean, and they're just mad. So, I mean, look at, like you say, Luton drew 1-1 against Leeds, and they get absolutely pumped at home. But it's just crazy. I mean, Stoke were out of form, and then just rock up and win 4-0. I think if we just concentrate on ourselves, I think with the Wigan thing, it's difficult because you're always going to look at, oh, well, if they do have that points deduction, they'll be bottom. But I just think we should try and treat it as if they're not going to get it, because I think if you do, you might try and take your foot off the pedal a little bit. But if we can get anything on Tuesday, brilliant. But I'll be focusing on the Reading and Birmingham first, isn't it?
Yeah.
If we get two wins, Reading and Birmingham, I think that should be fine.
Yeah.
And because no one can get 3 points each, so I think we'll be all right. But yeah, as long as we try and be that little bit more prolific, like we've already spoke about.
Yeah, well, let's have a look at some of the messages that came in then over the course of the weekend after the defeat against Millwall. This one came in almost bang on full time. I saw it flashing up on my laptop while I was Millwall again. However, is this the worst bunch of attacking players for many a year? Their dread pad for many a year? Do you agree with Phil there, or do you think that's harsh?
It's difficult. Well, I don't want to sit there and slate saying they're rubbish, because they're not. What I think is that it's just unfortunate who can play up top that haven't had any rhythm. So even if lockdown never, Bond was doing okay, but again, he's come, like Benji said, he's come from National League to Championship, and sometimes it works if you're Jamie Vardy, but not for everyone. And then you've got Green, who is predominantly a left or right sided winger, if you're on the left, if he cuts in. So in terms of ability, I don't think it is. I mean, I remember the days when we had Pavel Abbott, Paul Benson and Joe Anyansa. So I know that was pretty tough to watch. But and that post-Sodgy, Jesus. I don't think, in terms of ability, I don't think it's there. It's not settled, and it's no one's in any form. So, like, you know, we know our defence is playing well. We know our midfielders can play well. We've got good midfield players. But at the moment, we're just not clicking up front, because we built our team around Lyle Taylor. And now Lyle Taylor isn't here, we've had to adapt. And again, that came, we've had, how long did he have to do that? Like, he had only had a couple of weeks to do that, to say, right, we haven't got Lyle now. So we've built all, because all our play did go through Lyle. We can't ever say that it didn't. So now we're having to rely on others. So I mean, I was quite vocal on Friday in the WhatsApp group. You know, I was
I was fuming because we weren't good enough up front. But I know where he's coming from, but I wouldn't say it's the worst set of attacking options we've ever had, given the list that I just said.
Yeah, right. Simon O'Hara emails in. Hi, guys. I had to wait until the morning before writing this to clear my head of the disappointment. Like all of us at the moment, I'm so fed up with the old, so predictable result. A lot was our own doing. We easily could have been 2-0 up before Millwall scored. Chooks has to start Tuesday now. He clearly causes problem about Chooks. He reminds me of Lee Burn, i.e. a good hold-up player. Not sure he'll get us 15 goals a season. All seems a bit clumsy, but he clearly causes defenders problems. Yeah, I mean, he got 19 last season for Milton Keynes over the course of all competitions. I mean, he has got goals in him, but yeah, he hasn't looked too much like scoring since he's come back, but he has been lively. Simon says, I'm writing this before any other games are played out on Saturday afternoon, so come by the time you record the show, we'll know more than by then, but I still feel we'll stay up, Josh. Yeah, I'm sure we'll feel more so like that after seeing all the results have come in over the weekend. With Luton 6 points behind us, and sadly, and I do mean that, we'll see Wigan drop into the bottom three with their points deduction. I just feel from the fixtures against Reading, Birmingham, Wigan, will scrape through to 50 or 51 points. It's my birthday today on Saturday the 4th, so at least the game being switched to the Friday didn't totally ruin the birthday again. 21 years old again. Yeah, happy birthday for Simon for last Saturday. Anyway, good show as always, and let's keep the faith. Yeah, cheers, Simon. Right, Steve emailed in as well. Hi, guys. It was a frustrating result, but not the one that will determine our season. That will be Birmingham and Reading, in my opinion. I felt we deserved what would have been a vital point again and score goals. I think Johnny has to come in for McGeady to give us more drive from midfield and win some set pieces. Hopefully we will stay up, and hopefully the battering that Barnsley and Luton each received yesterday and the sad Charlton is going to be tight and tense. Keep up the good work. Thanks. That's from Steve. Yeah, so could you think that's viable? Because I say, I mean, Johnny didn't look his best on Friday, but McGeady is pretty much flat.
I'll probably be getting a sheep's head in the bed later, but I wouldn't start Williams. I really wouldn't. I'd want to put Lapsley in midfield, and I'd want to put Ozzy, you know, somewhere around so he can flit around and put some passes. I think Lapsley will give you some energy, and he'll be a touch more box to box. And, you know, everyone's saying, yeah, everything was going through Lyle, but I think one of the bigger misses for us has been someone like Conor Gallagher. You know, okay, we can lament players who aren't with us, but I think, you know, he was making up numbers in the box. I mean, if you look at the times we got the ball into the box, and, you know, Hemed and Bond, and there was really no one else following in. So, you know, it's that kind of box-to-box midfielder. OK, it's not Albie's strong point, but, you know, Lapsley has got a good engine, and, you know, he scored season with that by being in the right place at the right time, and I think that's the person I'd put in on start on Tuesday. And to talk about strikers, no one's mentioned Josh Davison. You know, he's just signed an extension to his contract. Surely, you know, he's going to be champing up a bit, because now he's saying there's an extra space up front and he can go and show what he does. Okay, he's young, but if experienced strikers aren't scoring, you know, why not throw him in for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, and have him sort of like run around? But you've got nothing really virtually to lose. It is a mini league, so it's not like it's going to affect, if he doesn't score, it's not going to affect his confidence for a season. You know, no one's mentioned him yet. So yeah. I'd be tempted to not maybe start him, but let's stick him on.
Yeah, you're quite right. Yeah, Josh Davison's been an unused sub at times. He wasn't on the bench against Millwall, but he does seem to have been on the bench in the other games we've had so far since coming back from lockdown. So, yeah, maybe he will be an option that Lee Bowyer will consider when we're really not scoring goals. Right, Rootsy said, a lot of people call out Dylan for his kicking, but I couldn't help but feel most of his distribution is off the back of dodgy back passes that are sometimes closed down by opposition players. My bigger concern is goal scoring. By my count, we've gone around 11 hours of football without a goal from open play, which was Lapsley against Luton before the lockdown, and around 18 hours of football since the striker other than Lyle Taylor scored, which was Andre Green against Barnsley. Without this issue being addressed, I can't see us escaping relegation. Yeah, that's a good point. We just aren't scoring, unfortunately, from open play at the moment. Right, Dan said, Charlton being Charlton, we'll probably get a result against Brentford now. Results have gone our way today and yesterday. Strikers need a confidence boost. Cappuccino, still believe we'll stay up. Can't really blame Bond and Anike. Look where they were last season. Hemed did okay, but he's not a goal scorer. Basically, we lack firepower and we'll need to look for a goal and then graft the games to the full-time whistle. Right, Dan says, Carlin had to go on loan and rebuild his confidence after we kept playing him when he wasn't ready. In an eye, as good as he's been, he isn't ready yet for starting week in, week out at this level. What do you reckon about that, Ben? In that little spell before Christmas, and he obviously hasn't come back and hasn't got one since. What do you reckon?
I guess we're just all frustrated at the moment, aren't we? As I said earlier, I think there's a lot of pressure on Bond's shoulders since Taylor's not playing for us anymore. So it's hard. Maybe he feels himself he's snatching at them, whereas before the pressure wasn't on because obviously Taylor was injured. So it was a bit of luck. He was in the squad and he thought, oh, do you know what? Here's my chance to take it. Then he's shown that form. And then we're all going, do you know what? Bond can do it. He's done it before. And then he feels like the pressure. And maybe sometimes we forget that last season he was in the non-league playing for Leyton Orient. And of course, in an ideal world, of course, we'd like to loan him out, maybe get him some confidence, because he has had a massive jump of three leagues. So, yeah, in an ideal world, yeah. But look, we've got five games left now. So it's time to work with him and think, right, let's focus on how you were getting goals before and getting people around you that maybe aren't around you before that to get you those goals, because we can't get anyone else in now. And him, Hemed, Aniki, as Mark mentioned, maybe Davison, we've got to try and work a way of getting these people getting goals from open play.
Right, Southern Comfort said, yesterday went wrong when some silly prima donna decided he was frightened of getting injured and left us short of firepower, referring, of course, to Lyle Taylor. They're harsh blaming Bon, Hemed and Anike because that gets Lyle Taylor off the hook. Hemed has improved as a player. Anike has barely played. John says, we just need the strikers to take the chances they get given and if need be, have one of them have it go in off their arse cheek as they all can't. We all need to take on the opposition more in the final third. Stick Naby up front and play Williams from the start on Tuesday. Mina says, attack and midfielder unable to shoot with power on target since the restart. Suggests training staff watch new kids. Our players needs to be instinctive, automatic, accurate and creative. Practice needed day in and that we're after at the moment. And then John said, I didn't watch the game, but it seems that strikers missing chances was a key reason for the DSI clowns left us in a position where we only had one reliable striker. It'd be nice to score from open on Tuesday. Right, let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. We will be looking ahead to that game against Brentford on Tuesday later on. We're also going to discuss the answers that Paul Elliott, the new sort of owner, gave to some questions from the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust after the break, and we'll discuss a little bit more the situation that's going on at Wigan Athletic.
Whatever that is, it's slightly disconcerting. No direction, no set plan.
Solly, backwards to Lockyer. Lockyer, short to Bond. Bond, lovely chip ball forward to Solly. Gets the touch. Solly chips to the back post. He'll come the way of Perrington. It's an awkward one. Pass back to Cullen, who strikes. What a strike! There's Blutz. Comes the way of Bond with the header.
Yes!
Bond with the goal! And Charlton equalise! Josh Cullen's thunderous effort. It up in the air by Semi Ajayi, and Macaulay Bond had an open goal to head Charlton level.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. I think we've drawn a line under Friday's game against Millwall. Taking a bit of stick on social media as you do after these games, but you're so used to it now, it's just water off a duck's back, really. Unfortunately, something that was interesting on Friday, we knew that the Charlton Athletic Supporters Trust had sent some questions over to Paul Elliott, the new owner, and some interesting answers from. So I'm just going to point out some of them that caught my eye. So the first one is the fact that Companies House hasn't been updated with the details of the new owners. There's no indication of Paul Elliott owning the club on the Companies House website. This thing would normally get updated when there's a change in directors of ESI, for example. So the China Athletic Supporters Trust says, why has the ownership of ESI not been updated on the company's house website? And the answer from Paul Elliott was, until we get EFL approval, this won't be updated. It is important to us that we follow the appropriate protocol. The restructuring will take effect through the correct channels once everything is finalised with EFL. Now, this is ringing massive alarm bells, Nathan, because that's not how Companies House works. Companies House doesn't care if the EFL have said you're allowed to go and play in their football league. If you've bought the club and you are in possession of the shares, then that needs to be updated on Companies House. It's got nothing to do with the EFL. So that's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, it seems a bit weird to me. Exactly like you say, Companies House is, you can do that. Companies House is anything. It's like if you had your own business, you can change your shareholders and all that. That way you don't need
the EFL to approve when you sell your shop, your corner shop, do you? Like, it's weird.
Exactly. Imagine. Yeah, you don't need it. And that, I don't know, it's a bit of a weird response because it actually doesn't actually take that long to change shareholders and company sales. I've done it myself, so it doesn't actually take very long. As long as you've got it all in line, the EFL is more or less, if you're, I would imagine, sanctioned to own a football league club. I don't think it's not, oh, you can't update that website, mate, without our consent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a bit weird, but it always seems a bit weird with us, doesn't it? But yeah, I mean, I just don't really know what to take of it, to be honest, really. It just seems a bit surreal. But then if he's going to come out and say that, surely he knows that people actually know the actual curve and know how it works. So surely he knows, as soon as he said that, that questions are going to be asked, going, well, what's the EFL got to do with Companies House? Unless they're literally, well, so is he saying that they're not officially taken over then? And they're waiting for that to be sanctioned before they update Companies House? Or
that's the confusion, is the fact that they've been owning and running the club for however many weeks now, you know, talking about the amount of money they've put in, which we'll come on to in a minute. But if you own and run a business, then you need to have it updated on Companies House. It doesn't matter if the EFL are ready for you to say, yeah, that's fine. The EFL may well turn around and say, actually, no, you haven't proved the source and sufficiency of your funding, because we've been there before. But that doesn't mean that Companies House to go, oh, if EFL don't agree to it, I'm afraid you don't own this company. That's not how it works. And that's why it's very strange. One of the other things that came out of it then, so of course at the QPR game, I photographed Mohamed El Kakashi. At the Valley, and that was the first we'd seen of him weeks ago. He spotted at the Valley. He was there again on Friday night. So the Supporters Trust asked what his role in the ESI was now. And Paul Elliott says, Mohamed is a member of the consortium. He is someone that both Chris Farnell and I have known for some time. So that's all they've said. Bit unclear, yeah, really, who else is going to be in the consortium? That was asked. They said, once we heard back from the EFL, we will make that position clear. We are keen again to follow the correct protocol. The new consortium does not include either Mr. Nimir or Mr. Southall and will be completely separate personnel-wise from the company that acquired the club earlier this year. So still a lot of unknowns about who actually owns the club, who's part of this consortium. The fact that they don't seem to be willing to update that on the Companies House website, it will get a lot of alarm bells ringing. Now, another thing that's confusing, Mark, is the Supporters Trust asked if the money that was put in to help the club with the running costs and to cover the June wage bill, is that in the form of a loan or what? And and will it be sufficient to cover the wage bill? All they've said is, I can confirm we have injected a considerable sum into the club, which has gone towards both the ongoing running costs and covering the June wage bill. So they haven't made it clear if this money's gone in as a loan, which apparently Tanun Namir was going to do beforehand, although I don't think ever did put any money into the club. So there's still a lot of uncertainty behind the scenes of the funding, and whether there isn't specific to a specific question like this, you wonder, well, what have you got to hide?
Total politician answer is, like, I'm going to answer the question, you know, the way I want it, but that's not the question you asked. And, you know, because there's still, like, he's, you know, I presume he's sending emails and following up that way. That's what they're taking off. So you can't say, sorry, that's not what we asked. There are red flags everywhere with this. No one out of the good of their heart is going to be putting money in unless there's something in it for them. They're just not going to do that. Is it a case of, you know, with our luck, we will get to the last game, we'll be safe, and then suddenly they'll say, oh, administration, because of this X, Y, and Z. And, you know, and then it's going, oh, it wasn't anything to do with us, you know, because we're not even directors. No, look, Gary's House, we're nothing to do with this club. and they walk away and rock up another club next season. There's no accountability anywhere at the moment, and that's the worrying thing. I mean, I know, you know, Bowes gets on with it with, you know, with the coaching staff and whatever, and they just want to concentrate on the playing stuff. But, you know, those of us who have been following that the club for many, many years know that it's, you know, Terry will tell you, you know, the times where you thought, you know, we're going to end up going out of business. You know, we've survived by the skin of our teeth and stuff like that. And you're just thinking, is it another indication like that? I mean, it is a mystery. Like, say, the guy could disappear in a puff of smoke and no one would actually know anything now. You know, so I'd said a few weeks ago, I think they're possibly waiting till, you know, they find out what league we're in next season, then make a move and say X, Y, and Z. And if we are relegated, they'll walk away and go, right, it's not, nothing to do with us. We just mopped up the mess from ESI.
Yeah, well, that'll probably be the worst case situation. But certainly no one knows why on earth these people are here. I mean, Paul Elliott did try and say he spotted, he was made aware of the opportunity through Chris Farnell, said that he thinks that he can see a long-term future in an investment in Charlton. Charlton has the lowest budget in the league, and with the COVID-19 crisis, football will have to change, and that should level the playing field. So it doesn't sound like there's going to be loads of money going into the club or anything like that. But people are worried about the long-term future. We don't know what's going to happen if Peter Varney and the Andrew Barkley deal is going to go any further at this moment in time. They're still fairly vocal on Twitter, those two, but who knows? It's just shrouded in mystery, and it doesn't make you feel good about the future of the club, especially when we hear what's going on at Wigan now. We know they went into administration last week, and before we talk about them, I thought it was quite interesting because Lee Bowyer was asked what he made of the situation on Friday. The Addicts boss was asked how he felt about the situation at the DW Stadium.
Obviously, I feel for the manager. And the players and fans of Wigan, because they haven't done anything wrong, have they? And the manager's done a great job, turned them around, got them out of the relegation zone, and it looks like they're going to get a points deduction from what I understand. I think that's harsh on the on the management and staff and players and fans of Wigan. So, obviously, I can't control none of that.
Yeah, can I just ask Lee a quick follow-up on that Wigan thing? Say, I know there's obviously quite a long way to go, but if that points deduction, how do you feel about that kind of situation if that was to happen over the coming weeks?
Alan, your internet isn't great. I'll see if I can translate that. I think he was saying, Lee, that given the Wigan situation, how would you feel if the club were to benefit directly from that by staying up?
Well, I don't make the rules. So would I feel harsh on Wigan? Of course. But I don't make the rules, so it's not just with, I think, other clubs. It might not just be Wigan that are in that situation.
So there we go, Ben. Lee Bowyer talking about what's going on over at Wigan. I mean, it's hard to say what we can say, really, because, I mean, there's all sorts of rumours going around that, partly fuelled by the chairman of the EFL, Rick Parry, who got caught on tape discussing one of them. It sounds like all sorts of potential wrongdoing going on there. But, I mean, looking at it from a purely football point of view, I mean, you've got to feel so sorry for Paul Cook and his side, because they've worked absolute miracles since the turn of the year, really, to get themselves so far away from the relegation zone. And all of a sudden, it's like they're going to have 12 points taken away from them through something that is completely out of their control.
Yeah, spot on, mate. It's a joke, isn't it? Like, we're here to play football, and unfortunately you have people like this that are just involved that don't care about football. They're in to make money for himself. And yeah, Wigan have done so well. Paul Cook just focusing on the football, and they what was it, 4 weeks ago they had this takeover happen. I mean, behind the scenes, he probably wasn't sure what was happening. But look, they've carried on, and wow, since lockdown, they've done amazing. Great results against teams around them as well. Really cracked on. And then, look, this is going to affect them. Unfortunately, it is going to affect them. Like,
well, it could be good for us, but look, we don't want to see a team happening like that, because as Mark just said, we're looking at this happen to Wigan, where for us, we don't know what's going to happen. No one's taking accountability for who owns our club at the moment. So as much as we're looking at Wigan, we feel sorry for them, because we're in the same situation. We don't know what's happening at our club. But yeah, it is a sad situation. You got 4 weeks ago. How can that happen? How can the EFL approve something 4 weeks ago and it goes so drastically wrong in that short period of time?
Yeah, I mean, people are talking about whether there's going to be some sort of appeal against their 12-point deduction. I don't really know how that's going to work, Nath. I mean, you could argue that in the current situation, we wouldn't be shocked if there's a lot more clubs that go into administration because of the COVID-19 situation, with the fact that you know, we can't get fans in. It's very difficult to make more money at the moment to keep your running costs going. But at the same time, I don't think you can argue that that really affected what happened at Wigan, because there was this takeover 4 weeks ago. So whoever was coming in knew about that. So if this was just a normal situation where someone had come in knowing fully well that there's no money coming into the club, and then all of a sudden they've somehow lost all their money and they've gone into administration, then you can't really say that it's come because of an unforeseen circumstance because of COVID. So I don't know if they appealed on that basis, and I don't know if that will be heard, because everyone knew what the situation was 4 weeks ago. Now, if it's appealed on the basis that there's this rumour that there's some sort of bet going against their own team and they've crashed themselves into administration purely to win that bet, then the EFL would have to understand, I guess, that this has been done for nefarious reasons, to try and beat the system. And therefore, if they actually apply their own rules, they're actually helping someone who's trying to beat their own system, and therefore they might be tempted to appeal it. But then that opens all sorts of cans of worms with what would come next with other teams who go into administration. Now, other teams who do go into administration over the next few weeks, who've had long-term owners who've done their best for their clubs, but all of a sudden find they can't pay the bills because of the COVID situation, you could understand there why it might not be in the interest of the Football League to dish out 12-point penalties to, say, five clubs, if that's the way it goes. It's a real mess, Nath, and I don't know the right answer to it, but as a Cheltenham fan, you know, and I hate saying this, I mean, it could help us, but you'd feel awful about the fact that you'd feel dreadful if we stayed up because Wigan were deducted 12 points for something that sounds really, really dodgy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just confusing me, really. I mean, when I first saw it all and said that they might be appealing, I was like, well, why are they going to appeal against their own decision of going into administration? But like you obviously just explained the different scenarios. But I mean, if it is the rumour thing, it's just an absolute bunch of crooks, isn't it, really? But I mean, the things with points deduction, the only thing I understand that they've got to enforce things, and they should, rightfully so. But the only thing that annoys me with it is that in terms of football, I think that you play 46 games on the pitch, and wherever you finish is where you deserve to finish. And I think when you bring in financial stuff, I mean, you think of Wigan, I mean, they've been unreal. I mean, I think they've since the calendar year, they've been won the most games or something like that, or have been the most formed team, or something like that. Absolutely mad. But yeah, like you say, it's going to be interesting. If they do go ahead with the 12 points, they're going to have to, even if they make a special case for this one, they're treading on a fine line, because you've got to be consistent. And yeah, so, but it's sad to see, isn't it? And like you said, there might be some other clubs in the wings waiting to go down this road. I don't know how they're going to get around it, but they obviously ain't going to be able to just toe the line with every single club, because, well, especially now this one's come out. Because, I mean, I've read the thread that was put out on social media, and it's absolutely mind-boggling. And if you think someone can go and do that who's just a fan, then you go, well, what have the EFL done? So what are the checks of the EFL? Do you know what I mean? Listen, I know they've probably got a hard job or whatever, right? But surely you'd look at this and go, if the stuff that I read was true about, you know, the owners, they're more or less the same people or whatever, surely the EFL would go, hang on a minute, this don't seem right. Surely. Mm. But obviously not, mate. But so I don't know. I just hope it all gets sorted out. I hope they, you know what, I'd rather us stay up on merit. I don't want us it to be that we stayed up just because Wigan had a 12-point deduction. Like, yeah, it'd be great, But you look at it and you go, right, well, I'd rather stay up there because we actually done it. And that's why I think we've got to focus on just winning our games and pretend they're never going to get this deduction.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, let's turn our attention then to Tuesday evening over at Griffin Park, taking on Brentford. Mark, a Brentford side that are in absolutely flying form. Beat Wigan 3-0 over the weekend. They won 3-0 at Reading. They beat West Brom 1-0 at home. They beat Fulham 2-0 away on their return. So they've not conceded a single goal since their return. If you go back to their previous game before that, before lockdown, they beat Sheffield Wednesday 5-0. So they're, what, they 5 games without conceding a goal. Absolute hatful of goals going the other way. You know, it's weird that they're 5 points behind West Brom. So they're probably an outside chance of automatic promotion, but realistically, they're going to have to rely on going up through the playoffs. But I mean, they're right up there. As I'd say that West Brom, Leeds, and Brentford are the three teams that are absolute streets ahead of every other team in this division.
Yeah, I mean, Brentford. I mean, when I've seen them on TV this season, they are just so attack-minded. I mean, I don't know if you've got the table in front of you, but I think they scored something like about 76 goals or something like that, I saw. And it just...
Yeah, 73. 73 goals, by far the highest scorers in the division. West Brom are next with 71. And then after them, it's Leeds with 63. So, yeah, they've done very well in front of goal.
And they've got goals coming from everywhere, but they're front three. I think one of them's out. He's quarantining, but... They're still a phenomenal attacking force. And, you know, Griffin Park is a tight little ground. It's hard. I mean, I think the only thing in our favour is that our goal difference is better than most teams around us. So if we don't get absolutely slaughtered on Tuesday night, you know, and it's going to sound very negative, if we lose 1-0, I think I'd be happy with that, the way Brentford are playing. They play some really good stuff. I mean, they're going to have the majority of the ball, which sometimes suits us. But, you know, they're very quite... because they push up so far, you know, we've really not got anyone, maybe Doherty, who can get round the back. I just worry... Again, we were talking, you know, who's going to be fit enough to play. If Matthews is going to be playing, I'd want him playing. I'd put Perrington in. Because I think you need a proper left back. You know, Deji didn't do as well at Millwall as he did in the earlier games. But I think if you could put Perrington in, and try and be as tight as you can. Mm. I mean, even if you play five, put Naby in as well. But because they're so quick and nippy, you know, I worry for a lot of this. You know, especially running at Pearce and Lockyer, who, you know, aren't the most mobile. They're physical, you know, they're up for a battle. You know, unfortunately for Brentford, front three aren't really the kind of battlers. They're nippy little strikers. They're kind of like the Vardys of a striker world. They're not like the Mitrovic's. So they're going to give us all sorts of trouble on Tuesday night, I can see.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. It's the BMW they talk about over at Brentford, which is, of course, Benrahma and Bueno and Watkins. They've got 52 goals between them this season. It does look, so Bueno tested positive for coronavirus back in the 20th, so I don't know if that means he'll still be out or not. So it'll be a couple of weeks after, so he may be back by then. I'll have to see you on Tuesday, Ben. But even if he isn't, I mean, between them, Benrahma and Watkins, I think Benrahma got the hat-trick, didn't he? Over the weekend against Wigan. Watkins has got a hat full of goals as well this season, on 23 goals after 41 starts. I mean, whoever's playing out of those three, I mean, our defence has certainly been a bright spark since we come back, but they're going to have their work out on Tuesday evening.
Cool, yeah, we are. I mean, Barama, he's just too good for this league, isn't he? Brentford have a transfer policy where it changes, their team changes a lot every season, really. Because they're happy to sell players on once they get a good enough fee for them. They always say that they don't want to keep them. If they want to go, they're gone. Like, we had Ezra Konsa go from us to Brentford, and now he's playing for Aston Villa. They got a very well-organised side. Thomas Frank hasn't playing great football. I think Mark's right. I think we go for kind of five at the back and try and pen them in, but... then is there going to be a break for us in that? Is it going to be just full-on attacking threat? If we can keep it down to 1-0, is that a good result?
well, it's hard, isn't it? As a fan, you're thinking, oh, what? If we just lose 1-0, is that a good result? I know what Mark's saying.
Yeah, we understand what he means, but obviously we need to get something out of it, Naif, ideally. From our point of view, how do we go with it? We made 7 changes for the game against Cardiff last week, changed them all back for the game with Millwall. Obviously, that was 2 games in the space of 4 days, so you understand why Bo wanted to be fresh. I mean, do you think it will start to mix it up again now? I mean, are there some players who played at Cardiff who didn't feature against Millwall or didn't start against Millwall? Do you think actually it's time for them to come into that starting lineup? Is Chuksunike one of them? Is Johnny Williams one of them? Is Sam Field one of them?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, I'd probably make 4. I'd probably put Alfie on the left, Deji or Lapo at right, because we need to keep Matthews ain't going to be able to play every game. I'd save for the bigger games, the winnable games, and then Chucks and Ozzy I'd bring in. But for me, I mean, Tuesday we know it's going to be a hard game, but I'm going to look at it the way that it's a free hit. So do you know what? Have a go. What's the way you're going to? If we're going to lose, I'd rather lose and have a go than just sit behind the ball and then. Do you know what I mean? I'd rather have a go. It's a free hit. You never know what can happen. Brentford are a good side. And Bueno played yesterday, I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I think so. But you've got them three, and you've got Mekondez as well, who's like a technical player. And then you've got Pinnock at Jansen at centre-half. I mean, that's just unreal. I've waxed lyrical about them. And if we do get beaten by them, fine. They're a good team. I actually want them to go up automatically, personally. But yeah. Don't have to. But I think we'll be all right. You know, if we can try and keep it solid, play Ozzy, try and get the transition and the turnover through him, I think we might be all right.
Yeah, you're right. And Bueno did start against Wigan Mark, so unfortunately, our hopes of him being ill aren't going to come to fruition. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Right, I think we've had a look ahead to the game. I think we'll call time here on this week's Charlton Live. We'll be back on Thursday evening to look back at whatever happens against Brentford and look ahead to the game with Reading next weekend. 2 massive games for us. Let's hope we can pick up some points. Right, thank you to Nathan, to Mark and to Ben for joining me on the phone for this week's Charlton Live.
Cheers. Cheers, boys.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Cheers, guys. Good to speak to you. I've been Louis Mendes. Thanks to those of you who've listened all the way to the end of this week's podcast. Like I say, we'll be back on Thursday to look back at the Brentford game and ahead to the game with Reading at La Valley. Let's hope that between now and then we pick up a couple more points in our battle to survive this relegation dogfight down at the bottom of the Championship. We'll speak to you during the week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.